Good morning, everyone. Good morning. And a Chodesh Tov, a good month. That should be a wonderful month for us and for all the Jewish people and for all the world. And God willing, we should have a wonderful Besoros Tovos, good news, as we go into this new month of Iyar. We're here this morning to talk about something that comes about in the Jewish people, and that is that when usually you ask a rabbi a question, he's probably going to answer machloket, which means there's a difference of opinion on almost every issue. And my question is, when you have two Jews and you have five opinions between these two Jews, is this a good thing or is this something we should be embarrassed about? Is this something positive or is this something negative? And in my humble opinion, as we go through the sources, you're going to see that first and foremost, it's not so simple. But secondly, I think by the end of the class, you'll understand that it actually is on purpose. If you look at the top of the source sheet, you'll see that the sages within the Talmud and other sources that are based on the Talmud don't necessarily have a very clear-cut picture on this issue. If you look on the right side, you'll see a Tosefta in Sanhedrin that says as follows. Once there were so many students of Shammai and Hillel, as you know, Shammai and Hillel didn't exactly agree on too many things. They didn't listen or service their teachers fully. There was an overabundance of disagreement within the Jewish people. In other words, at a certain point in history, when there are so many students to Shammai and to Hillel, there's a lot of differences of opinion in the Jewish people. According to this source, is differences of opinion positive or negative?
Difference is good.
Difference is good. Why?
Difference opinion. According to the pursuit of truth.
We'll get to that later, but according to this source, it's a very bad thing. Shammai and Hillel obviously were good people. Their students didn't service them and learn from them properly. They fell asleep during the class. And therefore, there was a lot of differences of opinion. After the class, the students of Shammai and Hillel went out, and they said, what did Shammai say? And I'm assuming they said, oh, Shammai said it was okay. And another student said, no, Shammai said it wasn't okay. Shammai said it was treif. No, Shammai said it was kosher. And this went on and on. And unfortunately, there was machloket. There was the difference of opinion.
Doesn't that also reflect on the teacher?
Could be. Could be. But this particular Gemara says it doesn't reflect on the teacher, but rather on the students that didn't service the teacher as well as they should have. Yes?
It could read both ways. Definitely, if it's too much of a disagreement, no good, but some basic disagreement, like between Shammai and Hillel, is welcome.
Correct. But when the Gemara, when the Tosefta says, "Hirbu machlokot beYisrael," it doesn't mean positively, oh, we're so happy there's a difference of opinion, but rather, in the negative, there's differences of opinion. But if you look on the left side of the source sheet, you'll see that there's a lot of sources that say that differences of opinion is actually a very good thing. The most famous of them is the Gemara in Chagiga, Daf 3a, Gimel Amud Aleph. It says, "The words of the wise are as gourds, and nails well fastened are those that are composed in collections. They are given from one shepherd." And if you look at the source, and you can look at it as I talk, you'll see that even though there was one shepherd, God, that gave us the Torah, one speaker, God spoke in a certain way that allowed a lot of different people to interpret his words in different ways. And therefore, it says the Gemara, it's actually a wonderful thing. The Gemara goes on and on and on and says how even though it was given from one shepherd, it's a wonderful thing that there is differences of opinion. And I'll just read the end of that particular source for you to see what I mean. The Gemara says, and I quote, "Some who render objects rigidly impure and statements of those who render them pure, the statements of those who prohibit actions and statements of those who permit them, the statements of those who deem items invalid, and the statements of those who deem them valid." So imagine, you take a pot, and the pot was a meat pot, and you cooked chocolate milk in the pot, and you go to two rabbis, and both rabbis have a difference of opinion. One rabbi says it's good, and one rabbi says it's no good. Says this particular Gemara, that's great. When God gave the Torah, he sort of wrote into the Torah these differences of opinion. And the Gemara goes on and says that ultimately it was given from one shepherd, and it's all part of what we call the Torah, differences of opinion. The Mishnah in Avot, it's a custom of the Jewish people to learn Pirkei Avot at this time of the year, as it says on your bulletin over there. It says very clearly, "Al tiyeh dan yechidi, sheino dan yechidi ela echad." What does that mean? There's an English translation, by the way. You can look. There's no surprises in this class. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehu. The only person that judges alone is who?
God.
Mm-hmm. God judges alone. God doesn't have to consult anyone. But human beings should consult each other before they make decisions. And when you consult two human beings, I'm assuming you're going to have five opinions. More than that, the Magen Avraham says that there's at least 12 different ways to daven. Everybody davens. However, the Magen Avraham says, interpreter in the Shulchan Aruch on the Code of Jewish Law we quoted yesterday, that there's at least 12 different ways to daven. Let's talk about that right now. What do you know? You know Ashkenaz. That's the custom of the shul. What's next? Sfard. Next. Sfaradi. Yemenite.
Italki.
Italian.
No, it's the
Ha'ari. And we can go on and on. The Magen Avraham got to 12 at his time. He lived in the 18th century. He's already giving you 12 different ways to daven. And the Magen Avraham says there's 12 gates in heaven corresponding to the 12 gates of the tribes, and each tribe has their own gate and custom.
I don't think it's clear that he knew that there were 12, just but using that as a proof for legitimizing multiple ways.
Correct. But what he's trying to say is the differences of opinion is not a terrible thing. Based on these three sources, the difference of opinion is actually a good thing. So, I would say that within the sages, there's an ambivalent difference of opinion, like everything else. Is having a machloket, having a difference of opinion, a good thing or a bad thing? But as you can see, the overwhelming majority says it's not a terrible thing. I would like to suggest this morning, not only is it not a terrible thing, but it's actually on purpose. And this is from a few different perspectives. And allow me to indulge, and you'll tell me if you agree or disagree. Number one, difference of opinion is a reflection of human beings learning the Torah. The Maharal says that ultimately, when a person learns Torah, he uses his own or her own mind, and they learn the text in front of them. Now, when you take two different people to learn the same text, and you say, please summarize what you just read, do you think for your right, in your right mind they're going to summarize it word for word, letter for letter, alike? Says the Maharal, because God gave the Torah to the Jewish people, then ultimately human beings think differently. And he says as follows, it's impossible for the sages to have one way of thinking, and it's impossible for them not to be divided amongst them, as they are divided in their thinking. So they take a pot, the pot may have not be kosher, may be kosher, and there's maybe 5 different ways to say it's kosher, and 10 different ways to say it's not kosher, and maybe 15 different ways to say, well, I'm not so sure. And ultimately, that is the price, quote-unquote, of giving the Torah to human beings. Says the Maharal, that's what God wanted. At Shavuos, he gave us the Torah, and he gave it to human beings for them to think about the Torah, and therefore, the price, quote-unquote, is that they're going to think differently about various things. As the Maharal says, and I quote, that although they are divided in their minds, they gather together. And when they are gather, they have all opinions that don't agree with one another. He says, perhaps you will say, how am I going to learn Torah from now on? So how am I supposed to learn anything, because everyone has a difference of opinion? He answers, this is what he says, all of them was given from one shepherd, quoting the Gemara we said earlier. When God gave the Torah to Israel, he gave everything in the Torah as it is. And that is the law that contains an aspect to allow and an aspect to forbid, to make it kosher and not. The translation here is word for word, but what he's basically saying is that when God gave the Torah and he gave the laws of the Torah, he gave it in such a way that you could interpret it in different ways. And inevitably, because human beings are learning the Torah, they're going to interpret it in different ways. Now, you may say, very nice, in an ideal world, we all get along with one another. Let's see if practically, halachically, this actually works. Relevantly, was there a situation where a rabbi who disagreed with another rabbi said, but his opinion is legitimate? Do you know such rabbis? I say no, you say yes. Oh, wow. We're all part of the same Torah. Let's drink a l'chaim together. We're all part of the same Jewish people. You know such things? Rav Moshe Feinstein, you heard of? I would say Rav Moshe Feinstein, one of the great poskim of the 20th century, the posek of America, has the following idea. You cannot build an Eruv in Manhattan. Impossible. He says, "Im limchot biyada mikilim lasot eruv ben Manhattan." In Hebrew, I'll translate. Should we go ahead and take out a full page ad in the New York Times saying whoever built an eruv in Manhattan is a sinner, is a blasphemous, terrible Jew, is a hideous person who goes against Halacha, and you should not carry in Manhattan? Or there's an eruv in Manhattan, you may not hold by it because you have a different opinion, but it's okay. What does he answer? Take a look on the source sheet. What does Rav Moshe Feinstein answer?
He seems to tolerate it.
He seems to tolerate it. Not only tolerate it, but what?
Right.
He says, listen, I disagree. I don't think you can build an eruv in Manhattan. Manhattan is a thoroughfare, impossible to build an eruv. But he says that we have no power to condemn those that are lenient, as when they built the eruv, it would be permitted according to some authorities. And then he goes on to say, and they too are great rabbis. What am I, the only rabbi? I have the only barometer on the truth, the great rabbis out there. And these great rabbis ultimately were rabbis that built the Eruv. They didn't just build an Eruv. They had sources upon which they relied in order to build it. And therefore, we cannot go out and say, no, you're wrong. And not only are you wrong, we're going to take out a full page ad and we're going to prove you're wrong. We're going to put Facebook messages. We're going to go out on Twitter and say, whoever carries in Manhattan is a Shabbos violator. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, because the Torah was given to human beings, and human beings think differently. I personally think you can't. They think you can. They're great rabbis. Maybe I'm a great rabbi, and therefore we can have a difference of opinion and live together. You can carry with the Eruv. I won't, and nothing's going to happen. You pick a rabbi that you trust. You pick a rabbi that you trust. And obviously, when you pick a rabbi that you trust, you should follow what that particular rabbi says to you the minute you ask a question. Until you ask a question, you can do what you want, but the minute you ask a question, you should follow that rabbi.
So you don't advocate rabbi shopping?
Rabbi shopping is forbidden by Jewish law.
One issue I want this, another issue that.
Yeah. All right, but what happens to a community like ours? God willing, Rabbi Bergman will stay for another 50 years and we won't have this issue. When we go through rabbis regularly, we've had three or four since recently. Do you always stay with, so you ask a question, you ask that rabbi who's the current rab, they leave. Do you go back to them to ask, or do you ask the current? How do you choose which
when it comes to community issues, I think you should ask the current rabbi because he's the one you elected to deal with current issues. You personally, if you have a certain rabbi that you're close to, then in my humble opinion, you should go to that rabbi that you're personally close to. But for community issues, I think you should absolutely use the rabbi that's sitting in the chair at that moment.
So, but also they often pass down what they trust them to.
Not necessarily.
That's right.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, sometimes try to.
No.
Get into the course of Rabbi. Thank you. Yes.
There's something in the Talmud. I forget where specifically. There were two rabbis who were expressing opinions that disagreed with each other. And then a voice from heaven was heard that said, both opinions are the words of the living God.
Absolutely. It's a Gemara in Eruvin, page 13. And there was a big difference of opinion. And God said, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. These are part of the words of the living God. Namely, you honestly come to an issue. You try to learn it and analyze it, and you decide what you decide. It's part of the Torah. The fact that you don't agree is part of the fun, but it's part of the Torah. God is not a human being. He doesn't have one opinion. He's a multifaceted God that ultimately lends himself to different opinions as long as you authentically come to the issue. In other words, there's not going to be an opinion that says, well, Yom Kippur, some people say you have to fast, some people you don't have to fast, so we have a difference of opinion. That's already outside the realm of the halacha. But within the picture frame of the halacha, there can be differences of opinion. Next, not only is differences of opinion a price, quote-unquote, of giving Torah to human beings, but I would say that it gives you a full picture. There's a famous, famous Gemara that ends three different tractates in the Talmud, and each one ultimately ends with the following words. Some say this is the biggest joke in the Talmud. What does the Gemara say? Talmidei Chachamim arbim shalom ba'olam. Torah scholars increase shalom in the world. Now, what is shalom?
Peace.
You ever see two rabbis at peace with each other? So some say the sages had a good sense of humor, and here is one of the jokes in the Talmud. Well, very nice, but if you look in this particular Talmud, it doesn't say peace. We say shalom means peace. Shalom also means hello and goodbye. Shalom also means something else. Says Rav Kook on the bottom of the source sheet, it's from the word shleimut. What's shleimut?
Completeness.
Completeness. In order to get a complete picture of any issue, you have to have different opinions in order to get a complete picture. People come into the house, a new house, they're about to buy the house, and they say, oh, this is a beautiful house. And one person says, well, I see a scratch on the wall. And another person says, I think this window doesn't open properly. And a third person says, I think the wallpaper is beautiful. And a fourth person says, what a beautiful deck you have. That's a complete picture. But if you have one person who's going to analyze that house, then you're not going to get a complete picture. What are you going to get? One person's opinion. Therefore, the Gemara doesn't use the word shalom as peace. And if it says peace as a translation, it's a problem. Many, many a times in translation, we lose the actual true interpretation of the word. The word shalom means from the word shleimut, from fullness. So if we reread this passage, Talmidei Chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam, Talmudic scholars actually go ahead and do what? Increase a complete picture in the world. Because the minute Talmudic scholars come together, says Rav Kook, then ultimately each one has a difference of opinion, and you have a complete picture. Some say nice, some say not nice. You have a complete picture. So you take the mechitza behind you. Is it high enough or not? Some rabbis will say yes. Some rabbis will say no, it's not high enough. Some rabbis will say it was just right. And some rabbis would say that it's too high. That's a complete picture. On the other hand, if you have one rabbi coming in, then he'll say, yeah, I like this mechitza. That's not a complete picture. So we basically said, number one, when you have a difference of opinion, then ultimately it's a reflection of giving the Torah to human beings, and human minds think differently. And number two, we said that ultimately, when you have a difference of opinion, you get a complete picture of what the issue is at hand. Yes?
The understanding of shalom, is that the same understanding you have with the sense of shalom as one of the name of Hashem?
Absolutely. Absolutely. God gave us the Torah. So he gave it in such a way that it can be interpreted in different ways. So absolutely. 100%. Yes.
Where does the element of unity come in?
Unity is a separate lecture, but I'll just say in one word, unity does not mean uniformity. In other words, unity does not mean we all have to go into a straitjacket and be alike. Unity means we're one people and we live together. And we're going to fight together if needed. And we're going to take care of each other. It doesn't mean that we ultimately agree on every issue.
But when we have to fight together, live together, what have you, especially fight together, you have this community leader saying, yes, we should fight. The other one saying, yeah, we'll fight, but we'll fight next week. The other one says, no, we shouldn't fight. Where do you get the necessary? Is there not a hierarchy of issues that maybe call for more or less unity?
Unity, I believe, can be attained even if we don't agree with each other. In other words, I have a difference of opinion with you about whatever it might be, and we're still one people. The problem we have today in the Jewish people is that the minute we don't agree with each other, we ultimately change it to a personal vendetta. In other words, I don't agree with you, and therefore, because we have a difference of opinion, you're not a good person. Now, how did you make that jump? I don't agree with you. Fine. You voted Democrat, I voted Republican, I don't agree. Does that mean that you're a bad person or a good person? No, it has nothing to do with one another. So therefore, I think that you can have a unit that fights together, and yet the unit doesn't necessarily have 40 soldiers, everyone agrees on everything. Some like brown as their favorite color, some like black as their favorite color, and nothing happens. The world doesn't come to an end.
They need to agree on a leader.
Pardon?
And yet they need to agree on the leader.
So let's talk about that right now. Look at the next source on the page. Turn the page to number D. A means to get to the truth. The Shulchan Aruch says as follows. The code of Jewish law says, Kol ha-cholek al rabo ke-cholek al ha-shchinah. One who disagrees with his Rebbe, namely the person that is his teacher, is like what? is tantamount to disagreeing with God himself. And one who starts an argument with his Rebbe is like starting an argument with God. So according to this, if my rabbi said X and I said Y, not a good thing. I'm disagreeing with God, right? Comes along the Rambam and says, wait a minute, I have a caveat. But it's permissible to disagree with him on his psak halacha halacha conclusion if he has clear proofs and sources that he's right. So you're in a class, and you're ultimately hearing from your teacher. I'm talking about a teacher that really is a mentor. A certain issue. And you disagree. As long as you bring sources to buttress what you say, says the Rambam, not only is it permissible, it's probably okay. Now, let's see if this plays out. This is the code of Jewish law. In reality, does that happen? Of course not. What happens in reality? A rabbi says something. They come out and said the rabbi doesn't know how to learn. The rabbi doesn't know what he's talking about. The rabbi's going against his teachers. But he's bringing sources. He's bringing his honest-to-goodness opinion. Maybe he should apologize for what he did. Look at the next source. Masechet Sanhedrin. When you deal with criminal, cardinal crimes, you start from the side. Now, what does this mean? The Sanhedrin was a group of 71 judges. It was in a semicircle. Anybody know why? Says the Gemara, Menahane Mili, how do we know this? The Gemara says, Rav Amar Rav Acha Bar Papa, said Rav Acha, the son of Rav Papa, Amar Kra Lo Ta'ane Al Riv, Lo Ta'ane Al Rav. You shouldn't disagree with your rabbi. And therefore, they started from the side. Now, what does that mean? There was a semicircle, right? Where did they start the deliberation in the court? From the side. Because who sat in the middle?
The more senior
rabbis. The minute the senior rabbi would say something, you wouldn't want to disagree with him. If the chief rabbi of Israel said something, I don't want to be the one to disagree. I mean, I'll be in the news. They'll revoke my smicha. No good. On the other hand, I disagree with him. So what should we do? Honest to goodness. If you want to give your honest-to-goodness opinion, start from the young rabbi and go up to the senior rabbi, and eventually you'll have a proper debate. That is a Gemara in Sanhedrin, says Rashi, and as he explains it beautifully. From here we deduce, don't disagree with the greatest scholar of the Beit Din. Therefore, we don't start with him, because you don't want to be in a situation where you disagree with someone bigger. You start with the youngest person in the room, and if we did, and we would say that he accused of lying, well, no judge would acquit him. Well, what happened is as follows. You're dealing with a cardinal crime. Should we kill this person or not? Should he get the death penalty? So the senior rabbi says, yes. You're a younger rabbi. You think no. Unfortunately, if that would happen, says the Gemara, according to Rashi, many people would be killed because you wouldn't get a full picture. Why? Because you'd be scared. Now, let alone, you'd say it's inappropriate. The big rabbi said he should be killed. I'm not the one that's going to come out and say no. And therefore, says the Gemara, you ultimately start from the youngest and you go to the older. Yes?
Do you think this is designed just to give the younger rabbis a voice? Or is it because by the time it gets to the senior rabbi, he may change his mind based on the other's opinion?
Could be. Both could be. Absolutely. When once you get to the senior rabbi, after he heard all the opinions, he may say, I thought one way, but after hearing everyone, I'm now changing my mind. Absolutely. Now,
that's assuming that the younger rabbi isn't as knowledgeable as the older rabbi. Because somebody's older doesn't necessarily mean that they're more knowledgeable
correct.
Than a young person starting to.
Correct. Learn. Older and younger is not exactly the barometer. But you're absolutely right. But in this particular case, we're not talking about older, younger per se. We're talking about something a bit different, and that is that the older rabbi happens to be your teacher. And in order to give your opinion, you're going to be very embarrassed to do it if your teacher is staying there, your mentor. Yeah?
You hinted at the configuration of the Sanhedrin. You raised the question, but we haven't heard the answer as to why is it in a semicircle?
It's in a semicircle because we wanted everyone to have an equal say so that no one sits in one place and you can't see the other person. So everyone sits in like what we call in Hebrew a chet. You know what a chet looks like? Let's say here's two tables and the third table is over here. In order to ensure that indeed everyone has an equal say, that's the way they did it.
I'm sorry, one more quick thing. This is in contrast to the arrangement in Surah and Pompidita, where they actually sat in rigid rows and they had some really, well established hierarchy.
Right, Surah and Pupadita were yeshivas, and yeshivas indeed, when they learn Torah together, it's a little different than when you actually decide Jewish law.
But by the word opinion, you mean a carefully researched, a trained scholar, though perhaps junior to the senior, but something grounded in Torah and scripture and in prior opinions. I mean, you know, it's not like someone can just come up and say, eat shrimp. You know, I mean,
correct.
It's got to be something very well studied and within range. Right?
As I said earlier, within the picture frame of the halacha, there's difference of opinion, mm-hmm. and that's legitimized, and that's even, I would say, not only legitimized, it's absolutely encouraged. When you leave the picture frame and you start saying eat shrimp or eat on Yom Kippur, then it's a different story.
Correct.
So let's take an example and see what we mean. You heard of Rav Moshe Feinstein? We mentioned his name a few minutes ago, right? There was another great rabbi in America. His name was Rav Menashe Klein. Now, I want you to look at the following responsum. If you just remember this from this entire shiur, then in my humble opinion, I did a good job. This particular responsum should be put up as, I would say, the beginning of a new way of thinking and talking within the Jewish people. Rav Moshe Feinstein, great rabbi. Look at the date. What's the date? 1952. My dear friend and rabbi and Gaon Rav Menashe Klein, may he live for many good years. Hello and blessings. Rav Menashe Klein and Rav Moshe Feinstein had a very big debate on the following issue. Have you ever seen a strimal? You saw a strimal. You know that a strimal is a very good thing. It's that fur hat that Hasidim wear on Shabbos. And it works well, except for on one day of the year. Which day of the year that doesn't work well? If Shabbos comes out on a rainy day, how are you supposed to wear your strimal to shul?
Yeah.
They cover it with plastic.
Oh, they cover it with plastic. They put a plastic bag on it and they cover it. Here's the question. There's no Eruv. There's no way. There's no Eruv in town. Can you basically cover your strimal with the plastic bag and consider it part of your clothing, or is that considered carrying? Rav Moshe Feinstein said it's considered carrying. Rav Menashe Klein wrote a letter to Rav Moshe Feinstein saying, I apologize to disagree with you because you're the greatest rabbi and I'm a nothing. But I humbly think that you're wrong and that if you cover the strimal with the plastic, it's like wearing it and it's not carrying it. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes back, and this is the letter back. Everybody ready for this? This letter, God bless, is amazing. The fact that you apologize in what you disagree with me in a halachic matter is futile, meaning it's not needed. There's no need for it. And this is the way of the Torah, in order to work out the truth. And God forbid, shall you be silent when you feel someone is wrong, whether he's stringent or lenient. And he quotes the Gemara we just quoted in Sanhedrin, saying that you always started from the youngest student in order to do what? To make sure that everyone has an opinion. And Rav Moshe Feinstein goes on and says, and I quote, that not only should you not apologize for disagreeing with me, but if you disagree with me, you must disagree with me. Why? Because he says, we're dealing with heavy potatoes over here. This is halachic matters. This is, can we carry on Shabbos or not? This is a question of, are you a Shabbos violator or not? And says Rav Moshe Feinstein to Rav Menashe Klein, that if you see me as a great rabbi, I'm not going to see myself as a great rabbi, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, but you see me as a great rabbi, you can disagree, and thus you must disagree and state your opinion. And there's no need to apologize. So I taught this responsum many, many a times, and people said, Rabbi, due respect, Rav Menashe Klein wrote responsum too. He wrote a responsum called Mishnah Halachot, 19 volumes. So of course he can disagree with Rav Moshe Feinstein. But you can't disagree with Rav Moshe Feinstein. You're a nothing. I said, you're absolutely right. Except there's one thing that goes against you. What did I put into this particular source sheet? You saw I cut. It's a long responsum. I cut. But what did I leave in? Rav Moshe Feinstein did something for us that's an amazing, amazing act of kindness. He put in dates. What's the date? 1952. In 1952, Rav Menashe Klein was not the great Rav Menashe Klein of Borough Park. He was in his diapers. No one knew his name. And he was an up-and-coming scholar, but quite frankly, he wasn't a Rav Moshe Feinstein in 1952. And in 1952, he wrote a letter to Rav Moshe Feinstein saying, I think you can wear the plastic over the strimal, and nothing's going to happen, it's not carrying. And he apologized, and Rav Moshe Feinstein says, not only can you disagree with me, but you must disagree with me. And this is before Rav Menashe Klein became the great Rav Menashe Klein. And if you turn the page, you can see that Rav Menashe Klein actually was one of the people that was instrumental in actually making an Eruv in Brooklyn, which is a controversy to this very moment as I stand here before you. And he ultimately says that he wrote a whole book called Om Ani Choma. Om Ani Choma is one of the Hoshanot we say on Sukkot. Om Ani Choma, I am a wall. Now, why did he write a book, I am a wall? Rabbis didn't just name their books, you know, arbitrarily. Mechitza. It's a double intender. What's an Eruv?
A bunch of food.
An Eruv is like a wall. But many people were against him, so he said, I am like a wall. I'm going to stand up against all the people that are against me. I am a wall. So if you turn to the next page, you'll see, and after consulting with many rabbis, we gave our stamp of approval to the Eruv, but now the Agudas HaRabbanim came out with a proclamation that you shouldn't build an Eruv in Brooklyn, that it's a biblical public domain. And whomever relies on the Eruv is a Shabbos violator. That's pretty strong, right? Says Rav Menashe Klein, with due respect, that this is 100% wrong. Why? He says, in 1952, I wrote a letter to Rav Moshe Feinstein about a small issue. Can you put a plastic bag above the strimal? What did Rav Moshe Feinstein say to me? Excuse me.
You can disagree, yeah.
You can absolutely disagree. And he quotes it and he says, I don't understand these rabbis. Why did they come out with the proclamation that whoever codes by this Eruv is a Shabbos violator? After all, Rav Moshe Feinstein came to me and said that it's okay to disagree. So how come these rabbis come out now and say no? So, he goes on and he says that, with due respect, I'm pretty sure that these particular students didn't learn Gemara, and they didn't learn Halacha, and they don't know you can disagree. So we basically said till now three things. What were they? Number one, disagreements is of natural result of human beings learning the same text. Number two, it gives a full picture. And number three, the way Jewish law is governed, we want everyone to express their opinions. Even Rav Menashe Klein in 1952 against the great Rav Moshe Feinstein. Let's go on. Disagreeing is respect for the other opinion. This question, I love. Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the following question. I love this question. If you ask me which question really gets to me, like I can really laugh every time I read it, it's this question. B'davar sheyesh lecha eis hachashash likvoa mikomcha b'bnei Brak mitzad shebetoch divrei Torah, ika pe'amim she'ata omer shelo kedivrei Chazon Ish. Translation. A good Jew is moving from America to Israel. He wants to live in Bnei Brak. Excuse me. He wants to live in Bnei Brak. The problem is he doesn't agree with the Chazon Ish, who was the great rabbi in Bnei Brak. Can he live in Bnei Brak and give classes where he says the Chazon Ish, the great rabbi of Bnei Brak, says A, and I disagree with him? Or maybe he shouldn't live in Bnei Brak. You understand the question? What is Rav Moshe Feinstein Paskin? He doesn't just say you can live in Bnei Brak. What does he say?
I don't understand the question.
Hmm?
He questions why you're questioning.
Yeah, he questions why you question, and he goes on and says what?
That you honor him.
You're honoring this rabbi by actually dealing with what he said and saying, I disagree. Let's just take a simple example. I said something here today. Later on in the day, someone said the opposite, but didn't even acknowledge that I said it. I'm not going to be so happy. But if ultimately you go ahead and you say something, and then someone says, Rabbi X said something, and I disagree with him, that shows respect. Why? Because you actually count him. For example, if tomorrow morning they say, there's liberal rabbis in Israel, and they're terrible people, and they name my name, I'm going to feel great. Why? they're acknowledging my existence. If, however, I go and they say there's liberal rabbis in Israel and they don't say my name, then what's going to happen? I'm a nobody, says Rav Moshe Feinstein. The fact that you disagree with someone means you actually show that person what?
Respect.
You're actually acknowledging his existence. And therefore, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, you can live in Bnei Brak, and you can disagree with the Chazon Ish, and that's fine and legitimate, and there's no issue with that. And it actually shows respect, because you actually take his word and you say, I don't agree.
But would it have been incorrect to, that the fact that Minhag HaMakom of Bnei Brak is to follow the Chazon Ish?
No, Minhag HaMakom, meaning the custom of the city, whatever the custom is. If you're giving a class in Bnei Brak, or you're giving a class in Buffalo, and you say that we're going to talk about Mechitza in the shul, how high it's going to be. Should it be 10 tefachim? Should it be shoulder height? Or should it be up to the ceiling? And I say the Satmar Rebbe said it should be up to the ceiling. And I humbly disagree, and I say why. What am I doing at that moment? I'm not changing the custom in the shul. The mechitza is the mechitza, whatever it is, it is. I'm basically acknowledging that there's a different opinion out there, and that different opinion is so important that I actually mention his name. It was a famous cherem, let's say, against people. You know what a cherem is?
Yeah.
Ban.
Mm-hmm. And this ban ultimately said that these people are teaching women Torah, and teaching women Torah is forbidden. And they name your name. I'd feel great if they named my name. Why? I'm so important that they actually mention my name. So says Rav Moshe Feinstein, the same thing. The fact that the Chazon Ish and you don't agree, and you mention his name, you give a class and you say, I can't step over, pass over the Chazon Ish, Passover is over. I can only give a class and say the Chazon Ish said X and I disagree. That means you show respect. For example, the Chazon Ish said on Shabbos you can use electricity. I'm not talking about a bulb. I'm talking about regular electricity like an air conditioner. It's a biblical prohibition of building and demolishing. Can anyone explain that? The Chazon Ish said that when you connect, let's say, your fan to the electricity and you put it on, you're building. And when you disconnect it, you're demolishing. Why? Let's go back to school. Physics. Let's go back to the classes on electricity. You have a circuit, right? When the circuit is closed, the light goes on. When the circuit is open, the light goes off. He said that's building and demolishing. What do you think?
Yeah, makes sense.
Makes sense.
Makes no sense.
Makes no sense. Anytime you deal with electricity on Shabbos, whoever's giving the class is going to start by saying that the Chazon Ish said it was biblically prohibited, and most of the rabbis disagreed. That shows, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, the biggest respect to the Chazon Ish. You cannot give a class without mentioning his name. So differences of opinion, we talked about it on various aspects, and you see that the Rav Moshe Feinstein says that if you actually acknowledge the person that disagrees with you, it shows respect to that person. Yes?
When did the fear of living in the neighborhood and disagreeing with the group of intellectual, you know, politeness, but rather because he was afraid that Chazon Ish's followers will like his car or something?
Yes. Such thing happened and happens. However, I have to be honest with you, even though it happened and happens, the truth of the matter is that that's exactly probably why the person questioned what he did. And Rav Moshe Feinstein said, what do you mean? You're showing respect to the gentleman. You're saying to him that ultimately, you're such an important rabbi that I'm mentioning your name, but I disagree. And that's 100% fine. Yes. Okay, so just to sum up, we basically said that in within the sages, we don't know if a difference of opinion is good or bad, but we showed through various aspects that indeed it happens to be a very good thing. And we said the following words, and I'll just go through it very quickly. Number one, if the Torah is given to human beings, then obviously two human beings are not going to read the same text in exactly the same way. Number two, God gave the Torah to those human beings, and therefore there's going to be a difference of opinion when two human beings read the same text. Three, a difference of opinion shows a full picture of any particular issue. Four, not only does it show a full picture, but a difference of opinion is a means to get to the truth. If you want to get to the truth, you have to have everyone at the table and get to the truth. And finally, when you acknowledge the point of view of the person that disagrees with you, then ultimately you're showing respect to that person. So allow me to end with the following. We're in the middle of the days of Sfira. Sfira was supposed to be a very happy time. If you look in the last page of the source sheet, you'll see that Sfira was supposed to be such a happy time that the Jewish people should have been counting the days from Pesach to Shavuos, from the days we got out of Egypt till we got the Torah. Says the Torah reading on the second day of Pesach, we read it not long ago, Sfartem Lachem Yimocharat HaShabbat, and you shall count the Sfira until the day where you ultimately celebrate Shavuos. And then says the Ramban that Sfira is no less than what? Take a look. Sfira is no less than like a Cholamoid. Cholamoid is a happy day or sad day. We just went through Chol HaMoed. Let me ask you a question. A guy dies, God forbid, in Chol HaMoed. Does he sit Shiva? For his father, his mother, his sister, brother? No. Why? They're happy days. So says the Ramban, it's like Chol HaMoed. It's like Chol HaMoed. However, what happens today? When you say the word Sfira, what do people immediately say? Hey, Sfira. No music. No weddings. No haircuts, Sfira. We're counting the days to Lag BaOmer where it's going to be over. How did that happen? What changed? It says the Gemara in Yevamot, in the left side of the source sheet, that the students of Rabbi Akiva died, 24,000 students, and we mourn for those students to this very day. And therefore the Shulchan Aruch says, Nohagim shelo lisa isha ben Pesach la'atzeret, it's customary not to get married between Pesach and Shavuos until Lag BaOmer, etc. What happened? Look in the Gemara again. Tell me, what did the students die from? Shelo nahagu kavod ze baze. They did not respect each other. What does that mean in your opinion?
Overabundance.
No, not at all. It wasn't the machloket. It was the
doesn't say overabundance.
Refusal to accept other opinions.
Correct. It was the ability to have a difference of opinion and not to go out and do what?
Bad mouth.
And that they couldn't do. They couldn't make that jump and they died. Excuse me. So, you could see that as we're getting close to the giving of the Torah, there were certain students that were great students, amazing students, so amazing we mourn for their death to this very moment. And yet, what did they die from? From disrespecting each other. Says the Netziv, during the second Beis HaMikdash, they were great tzaddikim and chassidim and mamele Torah. They were righteous, pious, and learned. But because they were so righteous and learned, anyone that disagreed with them, what did they say?
You're not as righteous and learned as I am.
That's right. They start to call them bad names. In my humble opinion, Sfira will be happy again if we start saying differences of opinion are legitimate. And we're going to respect each other, even though we don't agree with each other. That's when, in my humble opinion, Sfira will be happy again. And until that happens, until we ultimately come to a situation where we, as human beings and as Jews, say there's a difference of opinion and it's legitimate and fine, because ultimately we all try to get to the truth, Sfira will continue to be very, very sad days. I'm hoping we're going to get to a day where, God willing, we'll be able to go back to what used to be. And if you look on the right side of the sheet, on the bottom, you'll see a beautiful medrash. Take a look at the medrash. The medrash says something amazing. The medrash says the following, that when the Jewish people were encamped in the desert, they were encamped in such a way that there were 12 tribes living around the same tabernacle. And because there were 12 tribes living around the same tabernacle, then ultimately what happened was people looked and said, how can these be one people? You mentioned unity before. There's 12 tribes. What was the answer? Yes, there's 12 tribes. And yes, they disagree with one another. And yes, they don't see eye to eye, but they're all part of one people. What's the proof? They all live around the same temple. Therefore, says the Medrash, that ultimately we should get back to that time. Then, when they were in the desert, the nations of the world were amazed that the same people can sit around the same temple, and there are 12 tribes. There's 12 different tribes. Each one's different. I'm hoping we're going to get back to those days where we can be 12 tribes and yet all be part of the same Jewish people. Thank you all very much.